I now would like to welcome Felix Neighbor from the Office for Disability and Michael Cromie to come up and answer any questions you have for the office.
Hello? Yep, okay. Hi, I'm Felix from the Office for Disability and...
And I'm Michael Cromie from the NDIS branch in the Department of Health and Human Services.
So we usually start by giving a brief update on some recent developments. So a few from the Office for Disability's perspective. First of all, many of you may be aware that the Disability Advocacy Sector Capacity Building Fund process is underway. So that's an additional fixed-term fund of $1.4 million to strengthen advocacy in Victoria. Applications close on the 1st of March, and disability advocacy organisations that are funded through both the National and Victorian Advocacy Program are able to apply, as are organisations that represent the rights, needs and interests of diverse and isolated groups. So that's open to a broader group than last time through the Innovation Fund, and that really recognises that to get better advocacy for people with a disability, you need to cast the net out wider, and expertise often lies not with advocacy organisations but with other organisations such as Aboriginal community controlled organisations or women's health organisations or community legal centres. So that's out there, and that closes on the 1st of March. So more information is available on the Victorian Government Tenders website. So I think that's tenders.vic.gov.au. And you need to register, and then you can download more information on that. So that's one thing we're doing at the moment. The other development is the release of the Every Opportunity Economic Participation Plan for people with disability. So that's been a significant amount of work, and it forms part of the state disability plan, absolutely everyone. So as you might have seen from the handouts, that really has a focus in three areas. So topical for today, education and learning pathways. Secondly, employment opportunities, both within the Victorian public sector and the business in the broader Victorian economy, and business ownership and innovation, so entrepreneurism, etc. I think the headline for this, the plan really is the target of increasing the employment rate from around 3% of people with disability in the Victorian public service to 6% by 2020. So that's across the departments and the Victoria Police Unsworn. And then that target will go up to 12% by 2025, and that will include the broader Victorian public sector, so all the agencies, so on and so forth. So I don't want to take up too much time, really. I might just throw over to Michael, just to allow time for questions and answers. But they're just a couple of examples of things underway.
Thanks, Felix. Yeah, so the role of the department in terms of the NDIS transfer is to support people with a disability, providers, and the community to transition to the NDIS. So I thought I'd just give you a quick update on where that stands at the moment, and then I'm sure there might be a few questions in the room about the NDIS. So the update is around 25,000 people have now transitioned to the NDIS, and when you consider that against the what's expected by June 2019, 105,000 people being on the scheme, we're a very, very small way there. So of the areas that have are either in transit, obviously Barwon, you'd be aware, commenced back in 2013, and now nine areas have commenced and are in various stages of transition. Hume Moreland and Bayside Peninsula are the next two areas that'll be transitioning on the 1st of March and 1st of April. So a lot of work's already going into supporting people in those areas to transition. And obviously work is still happening in a lot of those areas, the nine areas that I've already mentioned, to continue on with helping people to transition in those areas. So we're a bit behind where we hope to be at this point in time in terms of numbers, but also probably you might have heard some of the experiences around the participant pathway and what the NDIA call the participant pathway, and some less than adequate outcomes and experiences for people through that process. So it's worth just noting the participant pathway trial is underway at the moment in Maroondah and Knox, and that's with the local area coordinator, La Trobe Community Health Services, and in Human Moreland with Brotherhood of St Lawrence. And broadly speaking, what the participant pathway changes seek to do, and this might seem a bit strange that it's come to this point and people are not having this already, but much more in-person planning, so face-to-face planning, and that's been, you know, subject of a lot of consternation, people saying, how is it that you can do planning when you're not meeting with people? You might be calling them up. A lot of people saying they didn't even know they were in the middle of a planning episode until the plan arrived with them or didn't arrive with them, as the case may be, and they found out what the NDIA had decreed that they were going to get. So the process that NDIA are now going into has been obviously informed by a lot of activism and a lot of disappointed people talking about that experience, and the Victorian government has certainly been providing feedback and seeking to influence that process to make it much more person-centred as well. There's a couple of things the Vic government are doing as well just to support that process. So there's now a supported access team, so that team's able to do much more. So there was a number of people that were dropping out of the scheme, so they were called uncontactable, and there's a lot of question marks over why those people were uncontactable, and again, a number of the reasons that have been cited have been related to the process, a difficult process to enter into, and that often phone calls were made when people weren't around, or phone calls were made and no lump number was left. The NDIA had quite a strict regimen of getting people into the scheme. So throughout the process, a number of people haven't been able to access the scheme. So there's a process now going back over the areas that are in transition, or in Bowen's case, have ceased the transition process, and re-engaging with those people. And that's with the support of staff from DHHS. And the other thing is an intensive support team has been established in the department as well, that's there to support people who have been, again, experiencing less than adequate experiences throughout the process, in terms of particularly people with complex needs have often found the process difficult, and the support that they've been able to receive in a number of cases hasn't been adequate, or hasn't brought in other, I guess what the NDIA call mainstream services, adequately enough. So again, the support that's being put in place now with the intensive support team is to revisit those people and try and assist them to get the supports that they require. The only other thing I'll mention is the Victorian government announced a tender of services that at the moment it delivers. So a tender to no longer provide those services, and those services will be provided by non-government providers. So those services are disability accommodation, which is under the NDIA called supported independent living, and respite, which under the NDIA is called short-term accommodation and assistance. So that tender is now opened, and that means that that over time that the government will not be delivering, the Victorian government will not be delivering those services. But nothing will happen in this current year, so no one will be shifting over to non-government providers until at least the start of 2019. I think that's probably it in terms of updates on the NDIA. Might take some questions, Melissa, if people have got any about any of that.
Any questions, anyone?
Hi, it's Natasha from Daru. I'd just be interested, Michael, with your department, whether there is a formal way that advocates can feed into that qualitative stuff around pathways, because I just know at Daru we're getting a lot of inquiries about exactly that kind of thing, and from the agency the only response is wait for review or go through appeals, and that kind of, you know, they have to have a bad experience before they can actually make any positive changes. And then what I'm also hearing from advocacy organisations is even though they're doing the appeals and all of the review processes, that doesn't seem to be getting fed back to the planners. So the planners are still giving old information where cases have actually proven that there have been changes made, but the planners don't know that. So advocates are having to always do the same reviews, the same things, the same cases, even though they've been proven that they should have been altered at the start. So I'm just wondering whether, you know, there is some kind of formal process that, you know, Victorian advocates can connect with, you know, the transition team.
That's a really good question to start with. Thanks, Natasha, for that. I think what we would like to develop that we probably haven't been successful to date is a stronger relationship with the DARU and a more systemic way of gathering information about the experiences that people are facing. So we'll be talking to the Office for Disability about how we can do that. I think there's some real value in the experiences of advocates. We've also had other mechanisms where we've been able to gather information. So you'd probably be aware that there's a lot of funding that's gone out to organisations to support participants and providers through the transition support package. So there's some advocacy organisations that have been provided with funding through that. And we've now established more formal processes of gathering feedback through that pathway. And a lot of that is about the pathway and the experiences, but that can only be strengthened by the accumulated knowledge of the advocacy sector as well. So we'll definitely be approaching that in this way now. And now that the NDIA are at a point where I think they're quite open to changes in process and practice, and gives us a good inroad into influencing the approaches that are there at the moment. The second question, what was that covering off on your question?
Yeah, it's sort of the feedback loop, I suppose.
Yeah.
Even though there's a lot of work in advocacy being done in the appeals review, that doesn't seem to be going back through the NDIA to the planners.
Yeah.
So it's closing that loop, whether, you know, the NDIS transition team can be involved in that as well.
Yeah, so I think, again, probably you're part of the eyes and ears on the ground, but what we do have is transition teams located in each of the four divisions, and similarly, it's monolithic what's happening, and yes, the changes aren't trickling down as quickly. So you things are happening on a national, or are supposed to be happening on a national scale, and they're not hitting the ground. So we really rely on our operational divisions to gather that information and provide it back so that we can influence at the different governance levels that we have established, the way those practices are actually being felt. So again, I think what we probably haven't quite nailed yet is exactly how we can gather a variety of different sources of information and evidence about the experiences on the ground, and being able to empirically sort of influence the scheme design and the future of the NDIS. But we're certainly getting better at it, I think. And it'll be something that we can establish a better mechanism through advocacy, as we have done probably to date through our four operational divisions.
Hi, my name's Ali Parker. A question for Felix just regarding the Victorian Economic Participation Plan.
Yep.
How do you think the effectiveness of the implementation will go when there's no direct mention of Department of Education? It's got Minister for Housing, Disability and Ageing,
yep.
Minister for Industry and Employment, and Department of Health and Human Services in terms of monitoring and accountability.
Yep.
There's a bit of a gap there, and I'm hoping you can address it for me.
No, it's very much a whole of government plan. So there are a range of commitments that lie with the Department of Education and Training. I think with the two lead ministers, it's a really important message to say this is about economic participation. It's about jobs, which is why the relevant Minister for Jobs is alongside Minister Foley as the Minister for Disability. So it's very much a whole of government plan. It will be monitored in light of absolutely everyone, the State Disability Plan. And I've mentioned at various forums that there's a high-level governance group in government called the Interdepartmental Committee on Disability. and that includes executive representation from the Department of Education and all departments. There will also be a specific plan for the Victorian public sector, so a Victorian public sector disability employment plan. That's been driven by the Victorian Public Sector Commission. So that's very much about lifting employment opportunities within the public service. And there'll be a working group that will have representation or connections back to the education department. Also importantly, that group will link in with another group I've spoken to previously, which is the Victorian Public Service Enablers Network, which is a group of staff with disabilities. So there'll be that VPS plan for the Victorian public sector rather. Education and training will be connected to that, as well as they'll be connected to the sort of higher level group that oversees absolutely everyone, and this forms a key priority of that. So a long answer to your question, education are definitely involved, but there's various accountability measures and governance groups, etc., to make sure that the work stays on track. No worries. I should also say that the Office of Disability is more than happy to come back and present on the plan. I can't possibly do it justice in such a short time, but we can provide a more comprehensive presentation at a later date. Talk to Melissa about that. And Lucy McCarley in the Office for Disability, who's really taken leadership of this work, can present. And she is more of an expert on the plan than I am. But nonetheless, I can answer questions here.
Hi, I'm Andreas Kasnides. I'm an advocate, and I'm finding that if we can minimise the need for reviews by engaging more with the clients in terms of NDIS in respect to informing them the contents of the plan before it's actually returned back to them, and they're saying, well, actually, this is not what I had shared with you had I been given the draft version, or if I had spoken to someone prior to the actual plan itself, I wouldn't necessarily have to be involved with reviews, appeals, and going through that process. So I'm just wondering if there's any sort of mechanisms that are being considered to try to go down that path.
Part of the pilot, the trial that's underway in Maroondah and Knox, takes in a joint approach to the planning process, which involves the LAC, the local area coordinator, the NDIA delegate, who is the person that is the one that can sign off on the funding at the time, but most importantly, the person themselves in the room at the point of planning and decision making. So it probably seeks to try and stop that process of reviews being needed, because people looked at the plan and said, no, that's not what we agreed to at the time. This is about a much more at the time, this is what you're looking at, this is what you're signing off on. The answer, and I'm not part of the NDIA themselves, but certainly, again, what we've been trying to push is that that's a critical and fairly obvious part of person-centred planning, is the people that the planning is about are sitting in the room at the time of planning and have the opportunity to understand exactly what's going forward in terms of funding. So that's a plus. It's going forward, and the pilot gets extended into other areas in the next few months. So we can only hope that becomes, rather than the exception, it becomes a rule, and that the planning process is much more inclusive. And we'll certainly be pushing that way, and I'm sure the advocacy organisations will be pushing that way as well.
Hi, I'm Sharon Burgles. I was just wondering, the questions that are set out during the planning meeting by the LACs, it would be a lot easier to have that information out and available for particularly accommodation services to go through all that, collect all that information,
yes,
up front, instead of having to guesstimate everything and wasting a lot of man hours coming to a meeting, and half of the information that they've brought along isn't relevant. As a plan, it would be a really good framework for them to actually know those questions up front and think about. So can that happen? Or why isn't it?
So I think, and I don't want to keep pointing to it as being the panacea, because again, it's probably just about good planning practice. But the pilot also involves an earlier conversation with the various stakeholders that are involved in a person's life. And that is about them getting a firm understanding of what it is that will be involved in the planning process. As well as that, there's the planning toolkit, which is online, and I don't know the extent to which you've been able to, I'm not sure how accessible that is, I haven't been through the process myself. But again, that was a move of the NDIAs to try and give people an understanding of the sorts of things that are required to assist in the planning process as well. What documents will you be needing? What information will you be needing? And what sort of questions are you likely to be asked? That just needs to keep evolving and keep getting better. And the other thing, just from the Victorian government perspective, is a lot of funding's been provided out to organisations such as Valid and WIDAS and others to assist participants in understanding that planning process. And we can provide through the update after this meeting, a list of those organisations that people can also engage with prior to planning, because they've been through it, they understand, and they've helped participants through the process, and they're probably pretty well versed in what's required as well. So there's kind of a couple of parallel things that need to happen to help people through the process. Did that answer your question? No. Just if you don't mind, just let me know.
Yeah, it was more about we have difficulty getting services out in Gippsland anyway, yeah. Like Ballard and WIDAS. But just to have and from what I've seen in the toolkit and the information that's been out there on the NDIS website,
yeah.
it doesn't clarify the questions. So the actual questions that are asked by the LACs during the planning meeting,
yep.
If people had that exact information, they could sit down, get through the plan probably a lot quicker, because they'd be knowing exactly what the questions were, and then the LAC can then just tweak it or ask side questions to get more information from the actual individual. But at least that framework would be there,
yep.
which I think
yep.
is missing now.
Yep. We'll provide that feedback. I think there's two sides to it. I think there's what we've been strongly encouraging from our point of view is a much more nuanced approach to planning anyway, which doesn't deal with that really, because what we're saying is it should be a conversation where you're sitting in the room with the person rather than a script. So what the framework, I think, is a really good idea. Some of the questions they might be asking is a really good idea. But a lot of the feedback we've had to date is that there is inflexibility in the approach they've been using. It has been scripted. It is a checklist, a ticking off process, and we, from the Victorian government perspective, have been pushing the other way, saying that really what you need to be doing is sitting in the room having a conversation, and you might gather from that, you know, that these various items you need to tick off to enable you to allocate funding and the like, but really proper planning is a much more iterative and more flexible approach than the one they've been using. But I certainly take your feedback in terms of, there's clearly still questions that are being asked. Can we have those questions? I think that's a really fair thing.
Yeah, and particularly the accommodation services more
right.
because
yep.
Quite often the clientele in the accommodation services, they participate in the meeting, but they don't have that
In advance. And
exactly. And it would just save everyone a lot of time, I think.
Yep,
so thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Do you mind if I just say one more thing before you round me up? Because I realised that I failed to mention, just in terms of funding opportunities as well, information linkages, capacity building is one element of the scheme design. So there's individualised packages and then the element called information linkages and capacity building. So in Victoria, jurisdictional grants will become available in the middle of next year. But up until then, I suspect there'll be later this year an opportunity for organisations to understand what those jurisdictional grants are going to look like and start to test some ideas around information linkages and capacity building. And by full scheme, around $132 million will be available through that particular component of the scheme. So it's certainly worth keeping abreast of what's happening in that space as well.
Any more questions? Well, if there's no more questions, thank you very much, Felix and Michael. On your tables, you will find a questionnaire, and that's just for feedback for us to decide what we're going to have the next advocacy sector conversations on. You can also ask the office to address some things, like if there's something you want them to talk about next time they're here, make sure you write it down, we will pass it on for the next time we have a sector conversation. So thank you everyone for coming. Thank you to all our presenters. Thank you to the Auslan interpreters, Victor for live streaming, and Michael for looking after our sound. So safe travels home, and see you next time.